Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
In the dark, I play my dreams. Purple culture flows like sweet springs. I'm the daddy with the know-how seed. Creating the world like it's meant to be. Purple culture, P-I-M-P, I'm the king. Wrapping love in everything. Bringing change, making it last.
Welcome to episode 310 of the Permaculture Pimpcast, where Pimp stands for Permaculture is my passion. The only Pimpcast on planet Earth where we discuss permaculture, preparedness, and practical living. That's right, y'all. Just got to keep those jams going. You know what time it is. All right, yeah. All right, y'all. So I'll just get down to it. This episode, as always, brought to you by Hickory Ridge Soap from twooldcrowshomestead.com.
Turn that simp into a pimp.
Bam! Heaven's Harvest. Get 10% off with promo code PERMA. And don't forget Living Soil Foundation. In fact, I was out there doing another. In fact, I got a lot of cool experiments in the tank going right now. I'm going to talk about a little bit of it here in the farm section. Well, I want to give a shout out to all the people that are in here live. Ladies Farm, go check them out on YouTube. Yeah, Frank Family Homestead, Colleen, Shield Maiden for Christ. You always got to love that name. Yeah, Travis and a number of others out there. I want to thank everybody for joining us live tonight. And want to thank also the people that are listening. I know there's a great number of people that listen while you're out there doing your things, but want to give a shout out and a thank you for all of you. And if you would, go ahead. I don't say this enough often, but if you would, go ahead and give us a 5-star review if you think we deserve 5 stars over wherever you're listening to this podcast. So, yeah, do that and let everybody know what time it is. So how you doing, son?
Pretty good. How are you guys?
Yeah, everything's going good. Your mom is absolutely spent, and she actually got sunburned today out there. Oh, wow. Digging. Oh, yeah. She was out there digging comfrey and planting. And, yeah, I was out there. I literally ran in. I prepped the show a while ago, and then I was out there doing some work that I'm going to talk about here in a minute here in the farm section. But, in fact, I'll just get right into it. If you would, y'all, give us a thumbs up and let them know to go ahead and start suppressing us, because, you know, they do that sort of thing. Can't have this information out there for everybody. And you know who else is getting suppressed in a big time way is Joel Salatin. I know he started a YouTube channel, and you would think thing would take off. Yeah, you would think it would take off like nobody's business. But, you know, his podcast and his YouTube channel just seems to be puttering along. And there's a reason for that, folks. They don't want you to know. They don't want you to know that information. So, yeah. So I'm going to jump right into the farm news. What I was out there doing a few moments ago, and it all ties in with the Living Soil Foundation, yet another experiment that I got going on, actually quite a few, but I'm going to talk about a couple of them right now. Well, I was out there just spraying some extract. Son, there's a hill that goes under the power lines out there, and it's historically been full of that Chinese silver grass. Well, when it was still cold, I had the sheep go through there. They ate what they wanted. And then I went through with a weed eater, knocked it all down, and I covered up with a serious amount of carbon in the form of hay. And now I'm out there spraying this compost extract on it, and this was like the strongest batch I think I've ever made. So we're going to see if we have the same turnaround there. I'm going to try to do this in record time, because everything I'm doing right now is going to be open source for everybody out there who, I don't know, whether you got chemicals on, let's say you got some bad chemicals or stuff falling from the sky or whatever the case may be, seeing if we can find ways to clean all this stuff up. And I'll be honest with you, folks, first indications looks like we are knocking it out of the park. And all the soil remediation specialists, or the ones that think they are, around these places ever since that hurricane, it's funny, son, how a lot of them have already kind of petered out. And yep. From the very beginning, yep. They never did any initial tests. So how do you know if you're doing anything?
Yeah. Which, honestly, before this soil biology testing and stuff like that, that's kind of what it felt like. It's like the only way you could really judge whether or not things were, like, you were using correct techniques within permaculture, or like the techniques were correct in permaculture, was based on the results, which took, you know, a bigger period of time. But yeah, get some Hickory Ridge soap and you can be a pimp too. But are you using, on that hillside, are you using any of Dr. Will's stuff on that, or is it just all your own compost?
Well, today it was a combination of both, but I'm just going to keep Dr. Will's stuff on wraps until we cross the finish line. So if it was just my stuff, I know we'd hit the finish line, but we're just going to see how quickly it happens, you know, using some of his stuff as well. But I haven't really publicly talked about it, so thanks for springing the trap on that.
I thought we talked about that before. What it was.
Well, very little, but it's a combination of a bunch of things. So we're finding out that what we do already gets you to the finish line, but his seems to be a combat multiplier, and he's hitting spaces that we aren't hitting. So combined together, I spoke to him on the phone, and it looks like the results I'm having seem to be the same results other people who make good compost are having as well. So, yeah. So Dustin, yeah. When you can snatch the compost from my hand, you may leave this monastery. So who else was in here? Vernon says, thanks, Michelle, for the comfrey I ordered. No, thank you, Vernon. Thank you for your business. And thanks, everybody else out there, for your orders. We have bone sauce in stock, along with some comfrey. So if anybody needs anything, go check us out at the website. And, of course, we've got some rice knives and some other things over there. Comfrey salve, you name it. So we're only selling things. Look, we don't sell trinkets and stuff like a lot of other folks do. We're selling things that you can absolutely use, and things that we know work extremely well. And we're going to be talking more and more about that. And I know William does on his channel as well. In fact, we're going to be talking in the main section of this, of a video he just recently did, that would almost certainly be a blessing to everybody out there. Yeah, Kentucky Sustainable Living in the house too as well. They got a festival coming up. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're going to be there.
Yeah, yeah, I'll be teaching there. I'm not sure who else will be there, but that's going to be in July in Bowling Green, Kentucky. If you go to any of my recent videos, all the details are linked down below. So, yeah, can't wait to see you guys there. And then also, if you buy tickets, I think it's all through April, you get put into a raffle to win a Stop the Bleed type class taught by Bear over at Bear Independent. I can't remember which medical class it is, but Jason, if you're hearing me, try to, I guess, type in what kind of medical class it is. But if you buy a ticket within April, then you get put in the raffle for a free ticket for that class.
So. Yeah, it's definitely going to be worth your time, folks. That's, you know, there are so many people that have gone back into the matrix, but it looks like this, you know, the results of this tariff, or at least with China anyway, is pulling people back out of it. So we'll just
have you noticed it in your views?
No, not yet. I mean, I'm highly surprised over here. Well, son, it's funny because every time you and I do a podcast, I kid you not, if I put out a regular video, I don't really keep up with subscribers. I really don't care. I mean, I don't care about the number of subscribers. I just want the good ones. Okay. I mean, right. So I'm not concerned about subscribers. But I have noticed that every single podcast that you and I do live on here, I will lose anywhere between 10 to 50 people. And then I do a regular video, and then all of a sudden I get like 10 back. So it's like a net loss every single time. It's like they're trying to tell me something, but I'm not listening and I'm not caring because I really don't care about any of that stuff. It was never, from the very beginning, it was never about getting a million subscribers. It was finding the right ones. And honestly, with some of the stuff we talk about, I know that certain people are going to self-prune. They're going to pull themselves out anyway. So I'm not really too concerned about that. So,
hey, Christine Beatles in the house. I'll be seeing her tomorrow. I'm doing a consultation for her tomorrow over in Hope, Arkansas. Hey, Christine.
Well, hello, Christine, and hello to everybody else out there. If you would, hit that thumbs up, everybody. So I want to tell you about this other little experiment I got going. And, son, you're already going to know a lot about this. So I went out to one of the local places that sells compost. And the reason why I'm doing this is because it's spring, and a lot of people are going to feel compelled to go out there and buy compost. So I went to one of the places around here that has this highly touted, and I quote, mushroom compost, okay? So, yeah. So I went and got some, what was it, yesterday? Yeah, it was yesterday on the way coming back from Celtic Salt. I was down at the Celtic Salt headquarters, and it just happens to be like just south of Asheville. And I was there interviewing the owner of the place, Selena, wonderful, wonderful lady. And folks, if you're not getting Celtic Salt, I mean, good night, man. You really ought to be. And don't worry, in the video, I'll provide all the reasons why you should. Anyway, we're coming back, and I stop at this place, and I go in there and I tell the guy, hey, I'd like to get a yard of your best compost. And they're like, well, do you want the mushroom compost or the blended? I said, give me the stuff that is the absolute cat's meow the best. He said, well, that would be our mushroom compost. And I'm like, okay. So $80 later, I get out of here with this compost, and I'm thinking, boy, you know, I must love this audience, man, to blow $80. And yeah, that's why you're laughing, because you already know what the results are. So
I just did something today in the same lens that you just did. So yeah, when you're done, I'll tell you what I did.
I get this stuff back here, and I tell your mom, I said, I can, you know how you can look at compost, you can smell it, you can feel it, and it'll tell you a lot of what's going on right there, just using your senses. I could already tell this stuff was complete garbage, but they're charging $80 a yard for this stuff. And so look under the microscope. Have your mom look under the microscope at it. She calls me up there so I could film it. Absolutely nothing. Okay, son, let me just ask you, what do you think was in it?
Okay, there's three options. A, not a doggone thing. B, some bacteria. C, nematodes because there's a nematode extract applied right after. But as far as the fungi goes, no actual fungi hypha, all spores.
Not even spores. It was all bacteria. And they're telling me this is mushroom compost, which tells me, if you're telling me this is mushroom compost, that means that I should have fungal hypha all under this microscope. Not a one. All bacteria. So, folks, in fact, all I did see was a lot of actinobacteria on the outside of it, which isn't necessarily a bad thing if you're going to be growing a bunch of brassicas. But the point being is I want to do a video because I know a lot of people are buying this stuff thinking, okay, in fact, they should have paid me to take it away. That's how awful it is. Yeah. So, and there has not been a single bag soil that we've tested. William can vouch for this. We've tested every single thing out there. And of course, you got those fancy highfalutin ones that'll stick the, you know, they'll have the very deep, what is it? They'll have the good packaging, you know, that looks like it's really, really healthy. We've tested every last one of them. And there was one of them that was local, and it was the cream of the crap. And it was all junk. Every last bit of it. But this stuff here, complete garbage. Now, why did I buy it? I did it because I'm going to do a video to show people how on earth they can fix lousy, lousy, lousy store-bought compost. Because it could provide you a substrate to make some good stuff. So I'm going to show you two different ways in which we can go about doing it. How would you go about doing it?
I would make one pile of outstanding compost, and then I would let it cure, let it come down to ambient temperature, and then make like extracts with it, and then water the compost you bought with the extracts and inoculate the compost. I just got done testing. Okay. So I just got done testing a client's soil today. They're up in the Dallas area. They overnighted it to me. I got done testing it, And in fact, this wasn't even the first test. I was just like wanting to do it again for my own edification today. Their soil. Okay, so they sent me three samples. The compost by itself, which had nothing. The garden soil that they had previously, which had a lot of bacteria, had one. I saw one rotifer, actually got footage of it. A lot of bacteria, and then a lot of potential. Like, there's a lot of potential in the soil. There were a lot of spores and stuff. I know we don't count that, but at least they're like the spores are there. They're just ready, waiting for the right conditions. And then they sent me a combination of the soil and the compost. The soil that they had pre-existing there was better than the compost that they spent. I don't remember the exact amount that they paid for per yard for compost, but I remember like in my head cussing when they said this, they said the price. But let me grab this bag right here. It's right here.
Well,
it's not even the right doggone color. That is as black as my t-shirt I have on.
So what it's color should the right it be
doggone
for the audience? Out like, there, what color should it be?
Should look like 70% cocoa chocolate bar. That's what it should look like a dark, rich brown color. And then whenever, also when you make your dilution, which is when you add like your compost or your soil to the water, so that way you can apply it to a microscope slide, it shouldn't paint the water black. Like, it should be brown, like from the humic and fulvic acids and stuff like that. It shouldn't be black. I don't know why it's black, other than like there's a bunch of rotten material in that compost.
Or like Steve and a number, I think several other. Yeah, Steve says, yeah, I bet it had dye in it. And that's probably what they're doing, because, or they burned it. Because if it's anything other than that 70% cocoa, you know, you got some jacked up stuff there. Like Dan, you know, Dan's a friend of mine. He was the one that let me borrow his Greg Judy sheep to get mine squared away. And by the way, I ought to have babies here any day. That's maybe exciting. I want to re-say that. My sheep ought to have some babies. Yeah, I mean, this day and age, you never know, man. There could be some old boy backing them up, putting a sheep's feet in boots, man. You never know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, Dad.
Yeah, no trans-testicle polar bears or sheep, or for that matter. Yeah, he said never bought mushroom compost, thankfully, but using a 30 bucket system. Yeah, so there's two ways I'm going to go about it. So I'm going to show, I never offer a problem without offering two solutions. So one solution is going to be, I'm going to take one half of it and I'm going to create what Dan just talked about, a 30 bucket system. I'm going to basically compost the compost that I bought, which sounds insane. And then I'm going to take the other half, because I already have some seriously sticky, icky biocomplete compost over there right now. And I also have some worm stuff, and I'm going to make extract out of it. And all I'm going to do is take that stuff and put extract on it. So we're going to do it two different ways. I'm going to take it, use my stuff to turn this bad stuff good. And I'm going to take another half of it, and I'm going to start over completely. And I'm basically going to, I mean, this is insanity. I can't even believe people are charging for this garbage, but I want to give people some options on how they can go about turning this stuff around and how the biology absolutely works. So we'll be doing it under the microscope. This video is going to take a while to unfold, but it might have to be a series of things because there's too much going on. But like I said, half of it, I'm going to recompost. I can't even believe I'm saying this. I'm going to recompost. And the other half, I can't even believe anything would even grow in this stuff. And they're selling, I don't think even 10 times worse ever after COVID.
I don't think people are doing it on purpose. I just don't think people know. Like, whenever they're saying mushroom compost, they're probably using spent mushroom blocks and then ruining it and then selling it. I don't think it's an intentional thing by like some of these smaller manufacturers and stuff. I think it's a lack of information. And keep in mind, like, the soil biology stuff is relatively new in the scale of like fertilizer and farming and like how nutrients are actually derived and whatnot.
Well, I'd like to know, you know, if you and I can go out there and get training and learn how to look under microscopes, me, you, and your mom. Yeah, we spent a whole lot of money to learn how to do it, but honestly, if that's your business, if you're in the composting business, you better know how to look under a microscope. If you're going to tell somebody this stuff is mushroom compost, I better see fungal hypha when I look under that microscope. And there was none. it was, I think your mom saw one tiny little piece in the whole doggone thing. And all I saw was fungal actinobacteria, which you can see from the outside. You don't even need a microscope for that. So folks, the point being, if you're going to be one of those people, I mean, honestly, just like Dan said a minute ago, folks, I've done video after video. William has done video after video after video on how to make compost, because it's really the backbone of your garden, of your homestead. It really can be. You can do it with chickens in the chicken tractor on steroids. You can do the 18-day Berkeley method. You can do Jeff Lawton's. I mean, there's so many different methods, and it'll all get you to the same place. I mean, you can do, if you don't mind waiting, you could do the there's another one where it's going to make it seriously fungal dominant. I can't think of the name of it right now. The Johnson Tsu bioreactor. You could do one of those. Oh, it takes a while for it to unfold, but there's a bunch of different ways you can go about this, folks. And honestly, the best compost in the world for your farm is going to be the stuff you made at home. So if you need instruction on that, I've done a pretty comprehensive tutorial. I mean, if you want to watch our YouTube videos, fine, but I've gone through this 30 bucket method that Dan talked about on Patreon, and I've gone into pretty good detail about all the things you can do. And then all the little tricks, little things like adding, you know, if you want to make it more fungal dominant, and a way to do that, a little trick we got from Jeff Lawton, where you put make oat flour, stick that in there. Okay. That's going to increase your fungal dominance. Other things like, putting one thing I got from Stefan Subkowiak when I was up in Canada. And it's like, the folks, even if you just sprinkle some of this stuff in your garden, you don't want to go crazy with it, but volcanic rock dust. I mean, there's a reason why the vegetables in places where there's volcanic soil taste so awesome. Well, you can take some of that, and you don't need much. You just put it around. You can put it around your trees, put it in your garden, sprinkle it out there. Don't ask me how much. I mean, you just kind of judge it. I mean, you don't have to go crazy. And what's going to happen, son, explain to them what happens with what the fungus and the bacteria do when you put things, like when you have aggregates out there, when you have rocks, when you have sand, soil, clay, or the volcanic rock dust. What's the bacteria and the fungi doing with that stuff?
They glue themselves to it, and then they start breaking it down and like retrieving the nutrients that the plant told them to get. So the plant exchanges exudates with the fungi, with the bacteria, and then it's like a grocery list. They go get what's on the grocery list and glue themselves to an aggregate, but they can't make a direct transaction back to that plant until they get eaten and then pooped out of the predator. That's why you need the full soil food web. So, think of it this way, like your gazelle or your fungi and your bacteria are basically, in North America, your deer. Without a predator, then your deer kind of go rampant, go crazy. You need the predator to come and keep them in check, and then keep that that nutrient cycle going.
And that predator is going to be, you know, your nematodes, your protozoa, things like that. Those are the things that that are predators to those lesser. I mean, basically, what you see in the African savanna is the same exact thing going on in your soil, but nobody ever talks about this. Very few people talk about this. So, yeah.
Or the people that do put their own weird spin on it. It's like they got to take what's already established, what's existing, and then they got to add their own like flair to it, which 99% of the time just ruins what you did. Look, okay, to bring them back up again, Fat Ninja Food Force. If you look at his channel and his information, like, he makes maybe good compost, and then he makes an anaerobic tea out of it. All the microbes he just got done growing, he freaking suffocated. Like, what's the doggone point?
Yeah. So, folks, I mean, you don't have to complicate this stuff. I mean, even if something as simple as just adding carbon to the soil all through the winter, that could have been something you did in your garden. You could have put down some cardboard, you know, lay some hay, or you let your chickens go through it first, or lay some hay or straw, spent straw or hay, whatever, put that on top. I mean, you'll be shocked at how much improvement you get in a single season. I mean, if you're in a rush right now, another cool video to watch is the Instant Garden, which is basically sheet mulching. You can build soil so doggone quick in a garden. In fact, there's soil down there, and we've done this experiment every single year. We don't till, we don't weed, we don't do any of that stuff, folks, and I'm not kidding. There's two things in this world. I can do anything. I really believe I can do anything, but two things I detest is painting and weeding. So,
yeah.
And I'm not a lazy person. I mean, people have called me a lot of things, but lazy has never been one of them. It's just the monotony of those two tasks that for some reason with my brain, it just drives me crazy. So, well, how do you get around that? Sheet mulching. That's what I do. I don't weed anything, man. I go out there, I put it in, I sheet mulch first, put in, let's say it's going to be tomatoes. Okay, so you put in your tomatoes. And weeds come up around it. Okay, well, I don't care. There ain't going to be a whole lot of them because the soil's pretty good to begin with. You're never going to see weeds coming out of a good compost pile, okay?
Yeah.
The weeds are there because you're missing something. So if you're building your soil, 9 times out of 10, the weeds, they either come up really easily or they don't require a whole lot. So what we do the following year is just sheet mulch on top of it. And we've done video of, after video after video of that. So there's so many different ways you can go about this. Son, let me tell you a little something. I'm going to change topics real quick on farm news. Check this out, y'all. So I'm going down the driveway. Your mom, she had to go run an errand, so she was off somewhere. So I'm driving down the driveway. I can't remember what I had to do, but I was going somewhere. And I'm backing down the driveway because we live in a very steep, mountainous environment. Check this out. I get to the bottom of the driveway, and I'm like spinning my truck around on the road, on this rural road. Sure enough, man, there's a little girl there, like 7 years old. She's in like pajamas, got little slippers on and stuff. I'm like, what? Yeah. What am I? You know, it's one of those things that's so bizarre, you don't even know what you're looking at. And I'm like, how did a little girl get all the way out here? Because we live, I mean, you don't just accidentally get here. So the first thing in my mind, because I listen to so many podcasts, you already know what I'm thinking. Hey, yeah.
That's the first thing I thought too.
I'm thinking, man, did I come across one of them black-eyed kids? That's the first thing I'm thinking because of the podcast I listen to, whether it's Coast to Coast AM or some of these other things. I don't listen to a lot of those as of late. I've been listening to different things. But there's this phenomenon of black-eyed children. I won't go through all that right now, but it was a pretty big one. And I've known people, or I met a lady who ran into one of them. So first thing I'm thinking, my brain is like short-circuiting. Like, first of all, am I even seeing her? Second of all, what on earth? Okay, first thing I'm doing, I ain't getting out of this truck. I'm checking to see, hey, what's wrong with you, kid? Once I see your eyes, they're not black. I'm like, okay, I'll get out of the truck now. So I pull back up in the driveway, and I'm like, my brain's just not even functioning right now. I get out, and she's crying. And I'm like, hey, what's going on? And she says, my dad, and she's trying to, I'm like, what's, now I'm thinking there's a problem. She said, my dad, he wrecked the, he came off the road in his lawnmower. And I'm like, what? And then immediately I'm like, ding, ding, ding. There's this one guy that drives up and down this road and he's in a lawnmower and has a little basket on the back. And I said, is he hurt? She says, no. And I'm thinking, okay, so what are you doing here? I mean, do you need help? I mean, what's going on? I said, where is he? She said, he's on up the road. I said, well, why are you here? He just told, and she said, he told me to go. And I'm like, what on earth is even happening here? I don't even know how to process what's going on here. And then I go to get my phone. I'm about to call 911. And sure enough, man, I pull my phone out of my truck and it's dead. I mean, like 1% kind of dead. Soon as I try to, and then the thing just blacks out on me. I'm like, oh, good night, man. So I'm thinking, okay, I got this little girl crying on the side of the road out in the middle of nowhere. And I'm like, how did you even get here? She says, I walked down here. I said, you sure he's all right? She said, yeah, he told me to go. And I'm like, okay, this ain't the first time this fool is, you got to be seriously drunk.
Yeah.
You drive a lawn tractor. I think he's gotten so many DUIs or whatever that he's driving his lawn tractor around to where he's done this before. He was down at the neighbor Chris's house. There was one day they had the dude drove the mower off into the woods and flipped it over. Well, it was a wonder this little girl ain't dead or hurt, yeah. Seriously. And I'm like, okay. And I'm thinking, okay, man, in today's world, what on earth do I do? What do I do with this girl? My phone ain't even working. So I said, look, you want me to take you back here to your dad And then I'm sitting here thinking, okay, well, maybe if this guy's topped off, man, maybe I shouldn't be bringing her back there. But at the same time, I don't know this girl, man. I'm going to put her in my truck, man. These day and age, you don't know what somebody could claim you did. I said, where do you live? And she says, she gave me the address. And I said, okay. And I said, well, where are you going? If you live that way, why are you walking this way? She says, well, I got family down in that big white house up on the hill. So I said, all right, jump in the truck. I'll take you down there. So we get down there, and of course I drop her off, and you know, she, I'm just a, like I said, she couldn't have been but 7 or 8 years old, and get her down there. And then of course my brain's just, I didn't want to bring her back to her dad, because you got to be bombed out of your mind to drive a lawn tractor that moves very slow for the second time that I know of off into the woods and flip it over. And yeah. You got a little girl in the back of here. I don't know how drunk you got to be, or maybe he was on meth. I don't know, man. There's a bunch of whack jobs all up in these mountains. I mean, you never know. But anyway, yeah, that happened yesterday, man. I was like, okay, I don't even know what to make of this. But yeah, anyway, the little girl, I dropped her off at her, I guess, grandpa's place, and just went on about my business. But
Did the grandpa say anything?
No, I didn't even see him. I dropped her off, and then I just kept on going. So yeah, I mean, she apparently went up to the house and walked in. I was like, okay, yeah, this doesn't happen every day. So, yeah, that's some, look, we don't get a whole lot of, look, the most exciting weird thing that happens to me on a daily basis are these chemtrails that are dropping from the sky, not little girls down at the bottom of the driveway sitting there crying.
Hey, real quick, one thing I want to clarify. Steve's DIY projects, that's not the kind of black-eyed children we were talking about. We wouldn't have been laughing talking about the other kind of black-eyed children. The black-eyed children we were talking about are more of like a cryptid-type child. The one you're talking about is referred to as like panda eyes. That's completely different. That's not honestly, what we were talking about.
Had it been something like that, believe me, I'd have been doing this one from prison. Anybody hurts a child on my watch, y'all. I mean, look, I'm just going to say it straight up. You hurt a kid and I'm anywhere in the vicinity, I'm going to put you through a 5-minute flurry of fists, and you'll be lucky if that's all you get out of the deal.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
no,
that's light.
Like that. No, we're talking about this weird phenomenon. But anyway, somebody said, what about the guy on the mower? I have no idea. I saw that fool driving up and down here today. Like I said, in these mountains, and you know who they are, you know what they drive. He drives this mower. You'll see drug dealers going up and down these mountain roads, and they stick out like a sore thumb. So it makes you wonder why the cops haven't nabbed them. There's this one guy, I won't go into detail, but when you see the same car going up and down the road 15 times in one day at a time where somebody ought to be at work, if you got a job, you know, they're delivering drugs or slinging whatever. But yeah, the guy on the mower, here he was today. Apparently got the thing unflipped and brought back out. But this is the second time that I know of that this clown is, this clown has basically flipped his mower. I don't know. And then you got a little child in the back of it. But anyway, maybe her granddad will get things squared away. And then I was telling your mom that, man, I was thinking, okay, should I call Child Protective Services? And then I'm thinking, okay, half the time they're worse than the freaking problem to begin with. Then that child ends up in some place where in foster care, and who knows what's happening to him. It was just one of those things where you think, you know, I spend a fair amount of time preparing my mind for different scenarios, but folks, I'll be honest with you. This one was not on the radar. I didn't see this one coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway,
yeah. Hey, Steve. Yeah, you're good, man. You're good. I understand, like, the mix-up and everything. You're totally fine. But yeah, that's a check out. Anybody who's curious, check out Black Eyed Children if you want a scary story or something like that. Yeah, Make Millstones Great Again.
Yeah, yep. I like that one. Yeah,
feet first in the wood chipper. Feet first on slow.
On slow. Yeah, we're just gonna keep it nice and slow. But anyway, I don't know. Yeah, this. I mean, you prepare yourself for weird scenarios, folks, but this one here, I didn't see coming. So, I just feel bad for the little girl. She said it was her dad. And honestly, folks, if you only knew how many people are strung out on these doggone drugs and this meth and what's that one that's killing everybody right now?
Fentanyl.
I mean, there's a lot of people up here. I mean, you walk alongside these roads long enough, you're going to find needles everywhere. So, this is weird stuff. So, anyway, yeah, didn't mean to spend so much time talking about that. So we'll just move on. Look, y'all, Wave Watch. Billy 100 will get you $100 off that Wave Watch. And remember, we got Bone Sauce and Comfrey back in stock. So I'm going to be doing a lot of videos coming up very soon as to why everybody really needs to get, at the very least, Comfrey. I mean, if you got deer or rabbit problems, okay, Bone Sauce, yeah. But if not, then you need to get Comfrey either way. Once you buy it, you never got to buy it again. You can split it. One plant sometimes can make up to 100 new plants. And we use it for everything. Michelle was out there burning up. She got sunburned on her back today. I knew I should have went down there and stopped her, but you know your mom, dude. She gets off. She's a machine, man.
She'd have been mad if you tried to stop her. She would have straight up got mad if you tried to stop her. Yeah. Today I just filmed a Comfrey propagation video on like how to multiply and split your Comfrey a couple different ways. It was a small plant, and I got 26 plants out of that, or 26 new plants from that one Comfrey plant, not including the one I planted back in the hole.
Yeah. So, good night. And I want to thank everybody once again for all your business out there. We're doing great stuff with it. All right. Coming up May 2nd through the 4th, Mountain Readiness. Yeah. You want to be going to that one. I'll be out there. Pat Miletich, world champion, probably one of the most prolific MMA trainers in the world at one point in time. Now he's something of a soil scientist. So he's going to be out there and showing you how to strangle somebody with your bare hands. May 4th. From 1 to 4 p.m., Lawrence, South Carolina, homesteadergathering.com. They're going to be having a gathering over there as well. Some fantastic folks running that one, so go check them out. I think they have a YouTube channel, not a YouTube, but a Facebook page, as well as a website. And remember, Redemption Shield, I'm G'd up from the feet up. You know how it goes, y'all. So anytime, look, I'm in the studio, okay? I'm surrounded by studio lights and all kinds of EMFs, so I got to stay grounded all the time, and that's exactly what I'm doing with this Redemption Shield mat. You can get 10% off with promo code PERMA. So let's go into this good news right quick. All right. So right off the bat.
Hey, real quick, Dad. Sorry to cut you off, but the last live stream we did, somebody in the chat, I looked back and somebody in the chat was asking where you get your grounding mats from and the grounding sheets. It's from Redemption Shield. Redemption Shield, right?
Okay. Yeah, I answered that question. He was just asking. Yeah, I didn't. Somebody sent that question out there. Anyway, good news. Prepare, try, prepare, protect, provide on BrightU. Okay, check this out, man. I can't believe somebody's never done this before. But somebody came up with an article on the Viet Cong survival tactics for modern prepping. And I'm like, okay, the best sappers. Okay, I'm a sapper. I'm an U.S. Army sapper. But we ain't nothing compared to the Vietnamese sappers. Those were the best ever. These guys were so slick. They could get in there and turn your Claymore mines back on you. So, and then they'd walk in front like you think you're going to blow up the enemy and then, turn back on you. But pretty good article over there. I mean, and some of the methods they used to do, and I think we probably ought to apply these days. Just because you like this guy in the White House right now, for me, it's the new boss, same as the old boss. But let's say, okay, so how long is he going to be there? Okay. Rest of this term, and then what do you get? Or maybe this guy isn't what you think he is, whatever the case may be. So using some of these Viet Cong strategies, and what they used to do was, I thought this was a fantastic article. It was at Natural News. Bury supplies in remote areas, but accessible spots like forests, unmarked farms, waterproofing, using PVC pipes, ammo cans, food grade buckets with, silicone liners and stuff like that. Revival tricks, you mark your caches with, very subtle things that only you might know about. I mean, and things to put in there, ReadyWise meals, obviously freeze-dried meals, you can put them in there, honey, vodka, bleach, I almost said those words I can't say. Obviously fire-starting materials and stuff like that. So one of the methods I used to use was PVC pipes. I mean, but they do condensate, so you got to be kind of careful about some of those things. Desiccant pouches might be your best friend in cases like that. Now, here's another one I didn't know about, and this is called TEF. It's an ancient super grain pack with nutrition and versatility. It's basically in Africa. There was a whole lot of these ancient grains that came out of Africa that are now starting to make a comeback, and TEF is one of them. you know, no gluten concerns, and you can do everything with bread or tortillas or whatever the case may be. So you have all the, and it's spelled TEFF, and it's Africa's smallest grain, measuring 1 millimeter in diameter, yet it delivers a colossal nutritional benefits and one of the highest out there. So, you know, you can make some pretty awesome. I got to get my hands on some of this stuff.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, but, you know, like einkorn. I don't have any reactions with einkorn. I eat einkorn and bam, I'm just completely fine.
So I have a buddy who has celiac and he can eat einkorn all the time with no issues.
Yeah. And if it's fermented like your mom does it, or, you know, she makes a sourdough out of it, and no matter what it is, I don't have a problem. But when she uses these ancient grains, man, I mean, and you can still do all the things that, let's say you want to have cookies or whatever every once in a while, or cake or something. Texture might be a little bit different, but I'll live with it, man. I mean, if it means I'm not eating poison. So, which, you know, it turns out I don't actually have a gluten problem. I got a glyphosate problem. So yeah. Here's another good one. Proper forest management is returning to the U.S., including logging and controlled burning operations. Guess what? Have these forest fires wouldn't even be there if they would allow pigs to just run in these, pigs and goats. If they would allow farmers to run pigs and goats through these woods, you wouldn't even have half these forest fires, notwithstanding the ones that are created by directed energy weapons. Apparently Trump's March 1st, 2023 executive orders aim to boost U.S. timber production and address national safety concerns regarding some of these lands. First of all, I don't think the feds should own any land any outside of D.C. anyway. But anyway, in this forest management, controlled burns, logging and stuff like that to reduce wildfires. So, like I said, it ain't doing you no good when there half these fires that we know of, like the, I mean, I won't go into them right now, but that one in Hawaii, directed energy. One in California, directed energy. The other one in California, directed energy. The other one in California, directed energy. yeah, there's a lot of those things going on out there. In fact, there's even visual, you know, evidence of it. So with that said, y'all, we're going to go to Eric, and then we're going to get into a topic that William brought up in, well, it, you know, one of his latest videos out there that I think is going to be pretty doggone helpful.
Hey, Eric Sider here with your PimpCast tip of the day. Today's tip, how our societies can and do use patterns. In humans and other social animals, we can find recurring societal patterns, changes especially relating to the availability of resources. Dynamics with fewer resources create greater fertility with a particular slant towards male births, while overabundance has the opposite effect, more female births and smaller families. When resources are adequate, a balance of male and female is reached, and that is where nature is trying to take us. When we can redefine wealth currently monetarily based, recognizing necessary resources, clean air and water, healthy food, comfortable shelter, community ties, as the real value in life, we can begin rebalancing our social systems. Art was originally used as a means of passing on knowledge, as opposed to creating art for art's sake. While works of art, songs, sculptures, paintings, dances might have been stirring and emotional, they were designed to compact and explain the science of survival. The beautiful aspects in these cases were effective for memorization, but providing a service was the point of the art. Art in ancient history was not meant for museums, but rather to be used. The intention of art was to have an intention, and that too is the way we design all aspects of our permaculture systems. There are many patterns, large and small, that we can use in our designs, and choosing appropriate patterns will create efficient results. Well-placed herb spirals create the microclimates, sunny to shady, wet to dry, necessary to grow a huge variety of culinary herbs in one small space, ideally located near the kitchen, where fresh herbs are likely to be used multiple times daily. Mulch pits and banana circles are amazing ways to utilize central systems for watering and feeding plants, allowing us to put more crops in less space with less effort to fertilize and irrigate. Getting into larger patterns, floodplains offer chances to take advantage of water flows for tasks such as collecting mulch and firewood, creating deeps for fishing, capturing sand and silt, and exercising opportunistic crop opportunities. In fact, water is a key to design patterns. Building landscapes that trap water high, disperse it through gravity, soak it into the landscape, and ultimately overflow safely into the next catchment. Methods like these are how, through adopting productive patterns, we can create absolute abundance. You can find me on YouTube and Instagram at Eric Sider. And if you're in need of permaculture t-shirts or remote permaculture consultation and design, head over to ericsider.com. And for those in the Sacramento area, check out my permaculture community group, permaculturefairoaks.org.
That's my dog right there. Boy, he packs a whole lot in a couple of minutes, man. I mean, you could make an entire show out of each one of those things. But yeah, I love that take on art where, you know, it was also a function once upon a time, you know.
Well, that's how Jeff Lawton teaches. He teaches using the art of storytelling. So that way you remember and you retain what he's teaching you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very effective method. I mean, like even in the Army, you know, when I teach, I like to make up acronyms. You know, it helps people. If I can make an acronym out of it, it helps people remember the concept, I think, a little bit better. But yeah, I mean, it's if I somehow find a way to fuse all these together, I'll be better for it. And so will any students out there. So, all right, EMP Shield, y'all, $50 off with promo code PERMA. Handle all your preparedness needs. Obviously, this is one of them. EMP Shield is not just for EMPs on your home. It's also for your number one threat, which is going to be lightning. Anything gets past it downstream, they're going to cover you for 25 G's. So EMP Shield, I got it on everything. When I say everything, I mean everything. Vehicles, home, you name it. Even got them for solar setups. So go check them out. And $50 off with promo code PERMA. All right. So let's see here. Yeah. Aaron says, hey, Billy, too bad about Michelle getting sunburnt. Glad you're having clear skies. How you liking the harmonizer, Aaron? Yeah, folks, they got a new trick they're doing right now. And a lot of people have been talking about it on X. Yeah, I don't know why I can't remember X.
Because it used to be called Twitter, and then they changed it to X. So every time you send something, you're sending a hex. That's why.
Ooh.
That's why it's hard to remember.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Okay. Yeah, I'm sure there's something nefarious with it because Elon Musk, I don't trust that guy as far as I can throw him. But, regarding they're spraying at night now. That's one of the – so many people have been raising such cane about it, and this is what I'm hoping people start to realize. And now you can see it here in the mountains because when you look at mountains and the difference, if you see that haze, they're spraying at night. There's been a number of people out there collecting it. If you have night vision goggles, as I do, you can look up at the sky and you can see them doing it. They spray at night, and it's more of a it's a different kind of spray. And anyway, this spray, you think you get a blue sky, but you really don't. The only time we have blue skies around here for any consistent period of time was the 30 days after that manufactured hurricane. There was absolutely the bluest blue you've ever seen, and you've not seen it since, not a single day. Trump's been in office how long, and we haven't had a single day. People think they're looking at blue skies, but you're not. They're not that blue. They're not as blue as they ought to be. They're hazy, but people think, oh, we got blue skies. No, you don't. They're spraying at night. That's what they're doing, and they're using a different mix. I was on the phone with Dane Wigington just a few days, about a week ago. And, you know, he's talking about some of this stuff. So they're being more slick about it. But anyway, to Aaron's point, he created this harmonizer that basically busts up these chemtrails. I'll be honest with you. I haven't really paid. I've been so darn busy as of late. I haven't been able to pay a whole lot of attention, but I will here in the coming days. But seriously, on these really nasty, thick days when they're out there spraying left and right, according to Aaron, you know, by the time this stuff becomes, by the time it hits the ground, it's inert. But I don't know if we need to kick up the power in this thing or what, but honestly, on those days when they're just going absolutely nuts, we see effects around here. So,
Steve, go ahead and shout out your Gorilla newsletter, by the way. I saw that you didn't want to advertise it or anything like that, but yeah, go ahead and shout out your Gorilla newspaper, especially if you're talking about things like we were talking about earlier with the kids. Like, yeah, there's no problem with that at all.
Yeah, anything is going to help these kids out. We're all about it. I mean, in so many different ways. And that's why we support Caleb House every single month. That's, you know, if you wonder what we do with our disposable money, that's where some of it goes. there and a few other places. All right, son, let's get into the brass tacks here. Increasing fruit production. William did a video just recently, and he did a fantastic job of it for an impromptu kind of video. And I thought we really ought to discuss it a little bit more, because everybody thinks we've crossed the finish line, and I don't know what they're thinking. I don't know how anybody sees, has anything improved, really? I mean, honestly, when you get down to it, has anything really improved in your life? So how folks have gone back into the matrix, some of them said, I'm going out and go buying a boat, like Darren, my friend Darren from Hacks for the Homesteader said. And then you got other people doing other things that just make no sense. They were completely on board. Trump gets elected, and then they go back into the matrix. If that's what you choose to do, you knock yourself out. But I'm not one of them. I think we're in greater peril now than we've ever been. And I won't go through and talk about those things again, but I've talked about them, the reasons why, before. Well, anyway, William, you were talking about, you know, by and large, most people, they go out there, they plant a fruit tree, and that's it.
Yeah.
Why don't you take it away and talk about what you just kind of recapitulate in this video, why that necessarily isn't the best way to go about it. If you're worried about food production, you're really selling yourself short. You just put in one thing, and there's so many other things you could have added to it.
I guess the main point of the video was to show people that you don't need as much space as you think you do in order to grow a lot of food. Like, you can grow a lot of food densely before expanding your orchard or your food forest or even your garden. So you have seven layers, officially seven layers of a forest. The eighth layer would be the mycelium layer, the fungi and all that stuff. But you have seven layers of a forest, and those are all opportunities to grow food. Now, one of the no, this is not how to propagate purple-headed marchies or purple-haired marchies. each layer offers opportunity to grow food, and they all act symbiotically together. There is not a competition for nutrients. There's a competition for sunlight, and that is what you have to manage. But instead of just planting a fruit tree by itself, and then I'm just getting, like, let's say a fig harvest, or let's say apple harvest from that. That's all I'm getting from there. I could introduce the other six layers, even eighth, as the time progresses. And then time is also it's a factor in this whole situation. And we'll get into that in a minute. But I can introduce the other six layers of a forest to that situation. So I have an apple tree. Around it, I can plant my shrub layer or even my understory. So let's restart. Let's say I have a nut tree. Like, I have a pecan out in the front yard. That is my overstory. That's going to be my tallest tree, and that's going to protect everything else that I plant from here on out. Underneath that pecan tree, I also have a persimmon tree that's under the canopy of that pecan tree and protects it during the high noon sun. Did I say persimmon tree? That's persimmon. What I meant. Yeah, I have a persimmon tree. Okay, cool. Yeah, I have a persimmon tree underneath that pecan tree, and that pecan tree protects my persimmon tree. The pecan tree can handle that high noon sun. The persimmon tree could, but it's not going to do as well dealing with that high noon sun. Now I can introduce my shrub layer, and these are all things that I can plant at the same time other than the overstory. It helps if the overstory is already established, or if you have something that's super fast growing, like a mulberry, for example, is a fast growing tree that can act as your overstory. Now I can introduce my shrubs. Now I can increase the number of my shrubs as well, because they are on a smaller scale than my overstory and my understory. So those shrubs could be anything from like blueberries to blackberries to raspberries, any kind of fruit bush you can think of or whatever grows well in your area. That's what you can plant. Figs could even count as a shrub depending on their tree form, whether they're growing shrub form or tree form. Kind of depends on the fig. I've seen the same varieties of figs have different forms, so it's kind of hit or miss. But I can do a higher quantity of the shrubs than I have for the overstory or understory. It just kind of depends on the spacing and how much space you have. And then I can get into my herbaceous layer, which I can even increase the number in on that as well. So that could be comfrey. It could be, I mean, any herb, like it could be rosemary, it could be thyme, any kind of herb, herbaceous layer. It's just think smaller shrub, and that's what you would grow there. And then you can do your ground cover, which is basically going to act as your living mulch. That's another opportunity for food. You can do ground cherries. You can do strawberries. You can do any kind of, you can do yarrow if you wanted to. Any kind of ground cover that you want to grow, you can grow in that scenario. Now you can start doing your roots. Now your roots, you have to be kind of careful with, because it, like by nature of it being a root, that means you have to dig it up. So you don't want it too close to your other plants where you, every time you dig it up, you damage the roots. Or if you do, make sure it's very, very seldom. Like comfrey gets harvested multiple times a year. That's something you probably don't want to plant too close to a fruit tree. But like climbing yams, for example, that's something that takes care of both, like two layers. But your climbing yam takes about 2 years to grow, depending on where you live and depending on the variety you use. Takes about 2 years to grow. So once every 2 years, that's when you're going to harvest your climbing yams. Which leads me then into the next layer, which is the vine layer. Now, this is where the time aspect comes into play. You need to have a mature enough overstory and understory in order for a vine to grow up it without pulling that whole thing down. But you could do annuals or you could do perennials when it comes to your vines. So like vines, kiwis are vines, dragon fruits are vines. It all kind of depends on where you live. But so are like pole beans. Those are vines. You could use those. You could use cucumbers as your vines, stuff like that. And then once you've developed a canopy and once you've developed shade, then you can start introducing the eighth layer, which is like a little bonus layer, and that's the fungi. So in the front yard, I have some pretty solid shade up there right now. I could potentially get away with inoculated shiitake oak logs up in the front, maintain a high level of moisture, and then keep them in a very high shaded area as well. So in one place where I before just had pecans growing, I now have pecans, I have a persimmon growing, I have rosemary, a bunch of my herbs, either culinary or medicinal. I have a bunch of shrubs growing as well, so blueberries, whatever kind of fruit-bearing shrub you want to do. I have a ground cover of like strawberries, for example. I am waiting on my climbing yams for my root layer, and then I could even get away with any like leftover pole beans that I didn't plant in the garden. I could go ahead and plant out there, and I could do shiitake logs. So I have a full like 8-course meal just waiting on me out there. All I have to do is add protein, which I can shoot that squirrel that keeps climbing my pecan tree and chirping at me.
Yeah. So that's
basically it.
No, let me throw another thing in there. So in comfrey, in a scenario like that, your comfrey could absolutely be used for chop and drop in a situation like that. So you don't have to dig it up. You can just sit there and pop off the leaves and use it as a mulch. So you could do that. Let me throw in another thing. Other areas that you could add to this, because I know you were talking about it from a fruit, but seriously, folks, now imagine what William described there. Okay, so that's one tree. Now you add another tree and another. What he's describing is we call a guild, okay? And it's like the fingers of your hand where everything has a commensal or even a mutualistic relationship with one another. Nothing harms anything else. In fact, go look at any – do you see things in lines and rows? Do you see a nitrogen fixer – keeping its space away from your fruit tree in nature? No, it doesn't happen that way. So why do we feel like we have to do this in our gardens? And it just blows my mind because we don't have to do it that way. You can stack so many. So instead of just getting, let's say you planted an apple tree out there, that's all you're going to get. And then you may not get it. And you may not get it depending on, you know, let's say it was late frost or early frost or whatever the case may be. Let's say you just had an apple harvest out there. Well, that's all you get is one. You get one harvest out of something. Doing it the way he's talking about, using things as a guild, you could potentially get 7 harvests out of it. And then let's add in some other things there, son. What if you were to introduce animals into the system like we do, where just think about what William said there, and then add another tree, and then another tree, and then another tree, and another tree. And then let's say you create another line of trees. Well, what can you do, Sam? What could you do between the aisles? Let's call them that. Between each rows of trees, what could you do?
There's the missing protein. We could graze animals in between. If you're doing it in rows, you could do it food forest pattern, or you could do it in like rows and get an orchard pattern, like a permaculture orchard type design. Shout out Stefan Sokoviak. You could graze your animals in between, which benefit from the fallen fruit that you're probably not going to eat. If it's been on the ground, it's probably infested with a lot of, you know, insects and whatnot. They're going to benefit from that. They're going to passively fertilize. So every time, no matter how flat you think your land is, it's going somewhere. The water, once it hits rain off, it's going to go somewhere. So every time it, you know, they travel through, they poop. And then every time it rains, it's going to passively fertilize everything downhill of that little laneway. And then also a big factor here in Texas is providing shade for your animals. Your animals will just flat out die if you don't provide shade, which if you look at all the cattle pastures around here, the only kind of shade they provide are on the edges of their pastures, which just ensures that the center of your pasture does not adequately get hit. Yeah. But you could graze any kind of animal you wanted to. Somebody just mentioned rabbit tractors. You could do small scale rabbit tractors if you wanted to, all the way up to like larger scale cattle laneways if you wanted to.
Or if you didn't even want to mess with that, you could do some alley cropping in between these guys. I mean, you could be putting in good night. You could be running Mark Shepard. He would run like grains in between his rows. I mean, there's so many different ways you can go about this. I mean, it could be annual crops that you have in between your tree layers. I prefer the animal. I prefer going the animal route because, like William said, you know, with every rain event, if you put these things on contour, all that rain event is going to take all that manure, all that urine and everything, and then push it up against the trees that are downhill of it, creating, I mean, a self-licking ice cream cone is exactly what this system turns out to be. And that's honestly, there's other things that you could do in addition to that, like all the prunings that we do from our trees when the sheep are by them. Well, we throw them over to the sheep. They will eat that as tree hay. There's not too much the sheep won't eat. So you could.
And if you are throwing something that they don't eat, as long as they have free choice, they're not going to eat it if it is toxic. And if they do eat something that you think is toxic, keep in mind, there's like a medicinal value to most toxic plants. Like it's once you hit a certain threshold that it becomes toxic.
Stefan Subkoviak told me that the best sheep he ever had, he was running them in between the aisles at his permaculture orchard. And he's like, man, these guys were almost too doggone big. I mean, they were eating everything that hit the ground and he was running them in and out of his aisles, basically the same exact thing we do. And then if you're running, let's say cows or sheep or whatever the case may be in between these aisles, well, okay, if you got cows, you're going to want to break up the pest cycle. So you're going to want to run chickens or ducks after them. So you're going to run some birds after them. You can run rabbits after them. So think about this, folks, think about how simple this is. And this isn't theoretical. This is what we do. You have all seven layers, eight layers really of the forest that you're getting a harvest from, all of them. Mm-hmm. And then because we're not putting the same exact cultivar, you never want to do that. So if I have one, I get an early, mid, and late of every single apple, let's say, every single cherry, every single plum, every early, mid, and late of every single one of them, not only to get a harvest early, mid, and late, but if I have a late frost or some damage or a bug decides to roll in there that I wasn't ready for, okay, well, it's not the end of the world. But if you have an entire orchard of the same thing, then you're either going to be spraying tons and tons of poison out there, which is killing all your soil life, or you can just let the bugs have whatever they want that year. Okay, so you don't get a harvest of that, but you get a harvest of everything else. But not only do you get to seven layers of the forest, you could potentially, if you do this right, if you plan it right, you could have a beef harvest. And then after the cows run through, okay, right behind them, you could have the sheep go through, or you could run them together. It doesn't matter. You could have a flurd, if you will. You could run ducks through, then run your chickens through, and then run rabbits through. You could run all these animals through in a very small place. And instead of just getting one harvest off of this ground, which would have been an apple, let's say in the regular case, I didn't count them all up here, but that's quite a few. I mean, we're probably looking at a potentially 12 different things, and that's just the ones I'm talking about. I mean, you could throw turkeys and a number of other things in the mix here. So let's not think in a Western mindset, y'all. Think permaculture mindset. In a Western mindset, we all have this reductionistic. We've been raised with it, whether we like it or not, and I still fight with it myself. This reductionistic worldview where, okay, I got this bug problem. And instead of saying, okay, well, I don't have a grasshopper problem, I got a lack of turkey problem. That's not the way we look at things. We're like, oh, I got a grasshopper problem. Let me go find out what they sell off the shelf to go kill these guys. Meanwhile, every single time, remember, we started this conversation talking about compost. Mm-hmm. Every single time you use that junk, you're destroying all the life in your soil. Every time you use dewormer on your animals, you're destroying all, you're killing your top predator in the soil, which are your worms. Okay. So we can get around a lot of this stuff just by, you know, if let's say it's been commercially farmed for years and years and you're trying to make that transition. Well, it's going to be a transition. Okay. It's not perfect overnight, but there
it's expected to be
process.
It's expected to be a, like, even in the permaculture design manual, it's expected if you're doing conventional means, it's expected to be a 5 to 7 year transition into a full blown permaculture farm. Now, speaking of the Western mindset, there is one thing that we should discuss when it comes to this type of like planting and guilds and stuff, is that you won't have as high of a, you'll have a greater yield, but you're, the amount of production per plant will go down slightly just because there is that competition for sunlight. But even though the production goes down, your yield goes up because you have to take what the plant produces and then you have to subtract the amount of calories you put into producing that crop. And then that's what your yield is. But with this type of system, it takes way less calories on your part to produce that production and therefore increasing the yield. So that's a little, that gets a little into the weeds, but like the first 2 weeks of your permaculture design course, you talk about yields, and that's very, very important when it comes to designing a property. You can go full blown maximum production on your property where it takes a whole lot of effort on your part, but if you're not producing more calories than you're spending for, like, you know, maintaining everything, or you have an increase or a decreased yield because you have to expend a lot of, you know, calories, you know, trying to get that production, then it, you know, there's diminishing returns when it comes to that. So the most amount, aim for the highest yield, aim for the highest amount of production you can reach with the least amount of effort on your part or the least amount of calories on your part. And then that will increase your yield.
That's what I'm talking about. So, man, I think we hit that pretty well. So folks, let's stop thinking in a reductionistic fashion in terms of how we do things in our gardens or whatever. I mean, we just go outside, look at nature, say, okay, well, are things in lines and rows, are the nitrogen fixers situated over here? Do we see all the same cultivar? If you do see it that way, I promise you it's not a healthy forest. You can immediately, if we can walk out in a forest and I see a bunch of pines, then here's what I know happened. It probably had a bunch of old growth forest on it. It was clear cut. And then the government or whatever logging company came in, threw a bunch of pines out there where there used to be a bunch of oaks. And that's not natural. That's not how nature does it. That's not how it goes down. And that's exactly the mindset we need to get out of. Plus, honestly, you find out that as you take every single step towards nature, you're going to find that you get 10 of them right back to you. And you know, as far as that transition, let me just say this one other thing. I mean, there are things we know now that could speed that transition up, like knowing how to leverage things like compost extracts and stuff like that, compost teas, things that could speed these transitions up quite a bit faster that maybe Bill Mollison didn't know the full extent of back when he was, when he wrote the design manual, which, by the way, is just fantastic in and of itself. But you don't even need any of those things. You just need, if you just used holistic grazing, you could clean up and solve all the soil problems like Alan Nation, Alan Savory, Greg Judy, Ian Mitchell Ennis. I mean, there's so many out there. This isn't hard to find. I mean, people are doing it and they're keeping a lot of that soil going from down the Mississippi. But by and large, most people don't know about this. They do it the way that granddad did it, and granddad did it in a way that was, you know, not necessarily great for the earth or even good for his own property. Because at the end of the day, this is part of what I've been teaching on Patreon, is if you can remove the inputs that you have to buy, then that puts you that much further ahead in terms of money. So the more holistic you become, the more it requires out of you at first, but honestly, like a food forest system, it ultimately gets to the point where it's producing more energy than it requires, but it does require a kickstart from the very beginning. I mean, if we didn't rape everything, because the farming practices, like Jeff Lawton often says, it's no longer farming, it's mining. We extract, and we're putting in anhydrous ammonia and all this other garbage. I mean, when you drive through some of the plains of Kansas, I mean, it almost makes you sick when you realize, good night, man. There are ways to do this that are so much better, offer a much greater yield. Farmer makes way more money, but, you know, we are all addicted to the reductionistic way of doing things, and that's what we got to get out of. Son, anything you want to add to that?
That's it. I mean, I think we covered a lot right there.
Yeah, we did. Steve is asking one question here. It says, maybe off topic, but is it safe to eat from the trees and comfrey planted in the contaminated area, being a dynamic accumulator? Wouldn't that comfrey be accumulating from the contaminated soil? Very, very good question, Steve. Well, this is going to be the answer nobody ever likes to hear in permaculture, but it depends. It honestly does. Because what we're doing simultaneously, part of the reason why I love, one of the things I love doing with leaves is composting them. Well, why? Because of the, first of all, everything's going to land on the soil by and large. It's got to go through there. It's got to make it through the soil, get up in the roots, and then it's got to get through that filtration system in the tree before it turns into leaves. So when I gather up leaves and I make compost out of it, it's probably one of the cleanest substances I can use. Certain oaks you want to try to avoid because they're resistant to breaking down. But comfrey, yes, being a dynamic accumulator, well, at first, until I test it and I know it's good to go, I'm going to chop and drop that comfrey at first, okay? Like the one I'm using on the site. I'm going to chop and drop it, and that's exactly the way it's going to be used on the site I'm working on right now.
Locks the toxins up in like carbonic acid. So it's there, they're just inert and they can't damage anything.
Right. They'll be composted in place. So they're not really going to do much problem there. But as far as eating the fruit, well, that's also, I'm going to be testing that soil. But number two, I'm less concerned about it. I think you got a bigger risk of buying fruit out of Whole Foods that's been sprayed. Even they call it Whole Foods, but honestly, the stuff you're growing in your backyard with Miracle-Gro, yeah, almost screwed up big time there. The stuff you're growing back there with Miracle-Gro is probably better than the stuff you find at Whole Foods. Seriously. I mean, even though I wouldn't recommend either. If you can help it, I mean, you got to do what you got to do these days. But yeah, the comfrey will chop and drop. And as far as the fruit production, by the time, if we're doing these things right, by the time these guys are producing fruit, I will be very confident at that point that we've well crossed the finish line, that we are so far across it, because if the toxins are that bad, the trees won't be doing good at all. But you know, I'm putting massive mulch rings around these guys right now, and I'm putting down extract weekly, so these guys should be off and running. But yeah, really great question.
Same thought process, like behind, like you can use black water, like basically toilet water, to water your trees. But you shouldn't do it for your lettuce. You shouldn't grow lettuce with black water. You can grow trees with black water.
I knew a guy out in Arizona. He was growing lettuce. I mean, he's been doing it for years now. I don't recommend it. He was a permaculture designer that I met when I was out there working on the Earthship. I had time to kill, so I went and visited this guy. That was a story to be told, let me tell you. And he was out there using his humidor to grow everything, and he said, man, I've been doing it for years and years. He's like, try this lettuce. I'm like, I think I'm gonna pass. I just ate, homie. I just ate some Mexican food on the way in here, and I did. So Bill's asking, have you ever planted sweet potato slips in hay bales? Doing that this year. No, I haven't done that before. I think we've done potatoes that way, but I haven't done sweet potatoes that way. I think it's probably a great idea and probably a great way to build soil. I would think that would be a pretty good way of building soil if you left it in place, if you didn't move it. So, let's see what else we got here. All right. Looks like we have, how close to the trees do you put the chips? Okay. So one thing you don't want to do You don't want to cover up your graft union on your tree when you're putting down wood chips. And I stack them. I go a foot high at least, because once the soil becomes alive, you're going to realize if your soil becomes alive and you can stay away from those unnatural fertilizers just by using nature, you'll find out that a foot high, I have places out here on my place. They had denuded this soil when we arrived here with, I mean, in fact, when we got here in the garage was all this dewormer. And I mean, it was all over the place. Place was absolutely lifeless. You couldn't find a worm out here. And it's to the point now where I can put a mulch ring around a tree that is about a foot high, and in 6 months, it's ground level. So that's, you know.
Just make sure it doesn't come in contact with the trunk. Like, leave a few inches. You still want to be able to see where the trunk comes in contact with the soil. So if you're looking at it from above, it should look like a donut instead of a volcano. Do the opposite of what all the landscapers around you are doing.
There you go. Yeah, where they just push it up on a tree until. Well, anyway, hey, I want to thank everybody for joining us here tonight. Thank everybody in the chat. Renewed Homestead, go check them out on YouTube. Thanks, Denise, for handling the rough crowd that we have in our chat over here. I want to thank everybody. William, thanks a lot for your wisdom on this matter, and that was a great video you did. So until next time, stay alert.
Stay alive.
Wisdom from sawing, permaculture dreams. Let the ideas unfold. I'm grooving with the truth, truth, truth. Feeling nature's truth, truth, truth. We've got the answers. All we need to do. Listen to the earth, they got us through. Let's see the machine. Watch the world spin. From the smallest sprout to the harmony begin in the cycle of life, for the magic's alive to the